Welcome to the Cigar Lounge, the official podcast of the Cigar Peg, where you get to know your friends a little better, learn a little bit more about each other, and grow as a community. And today, we welcome James Feldman into the Cigar Lounge. James, how are you today?
Excellent. Thanks for having me.
Glad you're here. Can you get us started by telling everybody a little bit about what it is that you do?
Well, I refer to myself as an advisor as opposed to a consultant.
Okay.
That delivers certainty in an uncertain world.
I like that. Tell me what that means to you.
So typically, my clients come to me when all else has failed.
Okay.
And somehow my DNA is wired to focus on the solution and then create the path to get there. And often it sort of goes with what has become our mantra, which is helping discover new opportunities using existing resources.
Okay. And let's talk a little bit about existing resources, because I know where you are in your space, and our resources have changed drastically in the past year. So tell me what you're doing with that.
So at one point, I had 150 employees. I had a 50,000 square foot warehouse. I had close to $500,000 in just cigars, because we were servicing about 150 casinos through their loyalty programs and other things like the cigar lounges, et cetera. And of course, 2008 changed it the first time and really started to lose a lot because of the economy, started to rebuild, and then COVID hit and what was still standing got wiped out because most of my C-suite clients were at that age where they were pushed into either early retirement, downsizing, or if you don't take any of the above, you're out of here. And literally during COVID, I lost about 25 clients that had been with me for an average of 26, 27 years.
Wow. Okay. And let's start with that. How do you come back from that?
Well, if we're being totally candid, coming back from it is sort of like climbing out of the Grand Canyon, right? So as you're moving upward, you've got as much risk as falling back downwards as going upwards. So for me, I'm just stubborn. And for me, I just am somewhat of a bulldog from that standpoint. And it's one step in front of the other. And literally, it was financially, emotionally, physically draining. But I constantly have delivered business value and constantly provide practical tips. And I am crawling my way back out. And that's been the trajectory that was altered dramatically when I started working with AI through one of my clients prior to it becoming a sort of everyday lexicon. And I've had a jumpstart. And so I have been able to use AI as a solution to many of the existing challenges, which I've always referred to as thinking inside the box. And now I say I think inside the box with the help of ChatGPT.
Nice. And tell me what, let's talk about a little bit, ChatGPT. What do you primarily use it for? Is there a primary use?
I refer to everyone that's interested in using ChatGPT to name it, like you're hiring an assistant. So okay. Mine is named Boris, and Boris came from Rocky and Bullwinkle. And Rocky and Bullwinkle's enemies were Natasha and Boris. And
yes.
Natasha was the heavy hands and Boris was the brains.
Okay.
And so I talk to Boris. I literally have conversations with Boris. And I'll say, Boris, I don't want to underestimate the value of high quality data. I need us to find the appropriate tools and create a solid business case that facilitates a seamless collaboration between the data and my end goal resorts. Boris, if you have any questions, ask me. Don't tell me that you're AI, and give me the long version, not the short version. I can edit a long version. I don't want to have to do a lot of work to add to the short version. And then I let it go. And I sit back and I watch it go crazy.
So if what I hear you're telling me, you treat AI like an employee that you are giving specific instructions to, and you talk to AI or write into ChatGPT the same instructions you would be giving a human, and filtering what it is you want to force it to do. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. And beyond that, and I guess I'm asking because that very similar to the way I treat it. I don't compare to it to Boris. I treat ChatGPT like the worst employee I have ever had, and I give it those kinds of instructions. But some people are looking for secrets. And I think that's why I want to ask you, the secret then really is to simply tell it what you want and make it clear. Am I correct?
When you are typing it in, it's called a prompt.
Yep.
And most people do not do a good job on the prompt. Therefore, the response is not very good. When you're specific and you're narrowly focused. And so I tell everybody, listen, you got this assistant who's incredibly bright, who speaks 39 languages, that's an expert in looking at data, is an expert at writing what that data means, is an expert in creating visual representations of that data. Stay narrowly focused, be extraordinarily specific. Now, I don't know if you're aware of this or not, but if you're using ChatGPT and you click on the left side where your account is, it opens up two dialog boxes. One of it is describe you, and the other is describe how you want me to talk to you, meaning how do I want Boris to respond?
Right.
And about 90, 95% of the people I talked to didn't even know it was there. Once you have gone in and set that up, it gives you a lot of leeway. I mean, I think it's 1,500 words. And so when you're doing that, Joe, you've got the ability to kind of come back into it and say, look, I told you this is what I wanted, Boris, you know, and it's called custom instructions. So here's my short version. I won't spend a lot of time. Number one, don't waste my time telling me that you're an AI. Number two, offer creative, innovative, and inside-the-box solutions. If you don't know what the inside-box solutions are, refer to my book.
Yeah. Nice.
Refer to resources that I can find. Be very precise and complete in your responses. Organize the data clearly. If you don't understand me, then ask me again, what is it that you want? And once again, I want long answers rather than abbreviated answers. And that's sort of the shortened version of how I'd like ChatGPT to respond.
Okay. That's awesome. That's awesome. And we'll get some contact info later, but if people need to talk to you about it, at Cigar Peg, you're willing to
coordinate
with them and make it happen.
Sure. Yep.
So let's move into another area that I want to get about. So I know you told us that your business changed because of the pandemic, but prior to that, what was the focus? Explain again, the focus of your business was high-end consulting, basically, correct? Advising.
No.
Advising. No. What was it?
Anythingforabuck.com.
Okay. and what does that mean?
All right. So The very first business I started, I was 7 years old. Okay. And I haven't stopped since. So what I do is I provide solutions to problems that I have helped my client identify. And often it takes me down a path where I did not have the solution. So an example, my first really big client was Toyota. Toyota really built my business.
Okay.
And the very first project I had from Toyota was $10,000.
All right.
And I did it well. And the second project they gave me was, we're going to introduce white griefs, but we don't have a vendor and we don't really know much about white griefs. We need your help. I didn't even know what white griefs was, Joe.
Okay.
You and I would know white griefs because the old cars had this white goop that looked like butter on the hinges of the doors.
Okay.
That's white griefs as opposed to black griefs. Well, I literally started calling. I went to other dealers to find out where they were getting their white griefs. Okay. You know, some of them were big companies. Some of them were companies that I'd never heard of before. But nevertheless, white grease was not a big deal to anybody. You know, maybe they were buying a case a year or something like that. But on two of them was the name way at the bottom of this company in Florida. So I called the company in Florida and I said, what do you guys do? He goes, who are you? And I said, I'm doing some consulting work for a car company and they're looking for white grease. And they go, we're the largest manufacturer of white grease, private label in the country. Now, I don't know what that means. Largest supplier. You know, is that 10 cases a year? Is that 100 cases a year? I don't know. I said, what else do you do? He goes, we make silicone spray. What is that? Well, you'd know it as WD-40.
Okay.
Oh, okay. Well, what else do you guys do? And they had a clear poly coat that you could rub on a car surface so you didn't have to wax the car again. So they had these three products and I took them back to Toyota and Toyota tested them and called me up and said, we love this product. Give us the name of the company and we'll take it from here. And I go, let me get back to you.
Okay.
So I went back to the company and I said, if I bring you this deal, I want a 10% commission. He says, I don't know if we can do that. I said, why? He goes, because we pay our outside vendor consultants 25%. He says, so are you willing to take the cut? And I go, oh, no, I misunderstood. I'll take the 25. And he said, how big do you think this client is? And I said, well, the client's got about 1,200 dealerships. He goes, why don't we just make it 30? I said, okay. I went back to Toyota. And Toyota said, well, you know, what's the name? And I said, well, in all due respect, how do I get paid for this? And Toyota said, well, on something like this, where you're just the middleman, we'll give you 10%. And I said, how about I'm not the middleman and you send the orders to me? That way I know what you're buying and I get 15%.
Okay.
And the guy says, we can't do that. I said, why not? He goes, because we have a contract with all of our outside vendors that do this and we pay 20. So oh. I got 20 from Toyota and I got 30 from the vendor for moving paper back and forth. The first order, Joe, the first order was over $1 million.
Oh my God. And okay, so you are clearly not afraid to tackle a problem that you have no clue how to solve.
And if I don't know how to solve it, I'll go find somebody who does and enter AI and ChatGPT.
Well, but even before AI.
And that's what I'm saying. Before I had to do a lot of phone calling and legwork, etc. Now it's a few keystrokes.
And I get that. But I think what I want to focus on for the people that listen to get to know you, the process you said was making phone calls and finding people. But really, it's a lot deeper than that. It's having, I want to say, the guts to not be trapped by your own knowledge, to basically have the ability to go out and learn something new because it could be a revenue stream. How did that come about in your life? How did you fall into this ability to make things happen?
I have two quick stories for you and your listeners.
Awesome. That's what I want to hear.
When I was 7 years old, I went to my mother and I said, I'd like an allowance. She said, go talk to your father. I went to my father. I said, I'd like an allowance. He said, go talk to your mother. My first business lesson was at the age of 7. Get all the decision makers in the room at the same time. So that's what I did. I got both of them in the room at the same time, right? And I said, I want an allowance. And both the decision makers said, absolutely, no way. So my great idea kind of backfired. Rule number two, when they say no, ask them what it would take to say yes. And I said to them, okay, you don't want to give me an allowance. What do you suggest? Well, you could wash the car. You could mow the yard. You could clean up the backyard. You could reorganize the garage. You can open up a lemonade stand. Oh, a lemonade stand. Okay. I went outside and we lived in a suburb of Chicago, mostly white collar, and lined up and down the street were lemonade stands. Literally, every driveway has a lemonade stand.
Oh my God, that's funny.
Some of the lemonade stands were experiences. They had tables and chairs. They had cookies. They had brownies. They had, you know, somebody playing music. I mean, some of these kids really had some pretty neat stuff. So I went back inside and I thought about it. And I went to my mother later that day and I said, the next time you're going to Shopper's World, which at the time was a precursor to a Costco's or a Sam's Club.
Okay.
I said, I want to go with you. And I priced out bulk lemonade, bulk sugar, bulk paper cups, and bulk Ziploc bags.
Okay.
And I made mom's lemonade kits. And at night, I would knock on the door and I'd say, hello, Mrs. Jones. Your daughter's lemonade stand is going to very, very well. You're going to need some supplies. So I'm going to save you a trip to the grocery store just to get your lemonade supplies. Would you like a bag that does 3 quarts, 5 quarts, or 10 quarts of lemonade? And here's the associated ingredients and cups to go with it.
So at a young age, you were the guy businesses went to. Nice.
Okay. So at the end of the summer, I was never outside. I never broke a sweat. I would only go after the sunset. And I had $351 in the bank at 7 years old. And I was quite young at the time. I mean, you know, age-wise, a long, long time ago. I suppose today that would be a few thousand dollars.
Sure. Yeah.
Now, let me ramp that thought process to the real money. When I was in law school, we had study groups. You remember study groups?
Oh, yeah.
And we rotated it. Everybody would host it at their house or their apartment. So it was my turn. And this guy calls up and he goes, hey, Feldman, I can't make the study group. I've got to go adjust a railroad car. I stopped dead.
What? Good.
Adjust a railroad car. Yeah. Did I hear you right? Adjust a railroad car. Yes. How do you adjust a railroad car? He goes, am I not speaking English? I said, apparently not, because I have no idea what you're talking about. I'm an insurance adjuster. Okay. Wait a second. You guys lost a railroad car? Yes. How do you lose a railroad car? Well, Jim, when they come into the switching stations, maybe the car was coming from the East Coast on its way to the West Coast, but that car needed to ultimately go south. So you get to a switching yard, which happened to be in Topeka, Kansas, and they uncouple it. They move the car off, recouple the car, and send that whole train on its way. And they wait for the train that's coming south to put that car on that train to take it south. Somehow it got misplaced. If you've ever seen a picture, it's about 1,000 acres of nothing but railroad cars sitting there. And they didn't have computers. Everything was done on clipboards. And so it was pretty easy to see that it was misplaced, right? So I go with this guy. We find the railroad car. It's locked. We got to go back and find the guy who's the manager and see if he's got bolt cutters. We get the bolt cutters. We go back in. We get the bolt cutters. And we cut off the lock. Inside, number 10 cans of Chef Boyardee spaghetti sauce. Number 10 cans, the big restaurant size.
Okay.
We're both stared at it. I said, what are you going to do with this? He said, I have no idea. I said, well, how much do you think is in here? He goes, I have no idea. I said, you don't have a manifest? He goes, no. So I said, did you happen to bring an industrial tape measure? Yes. Okay. Let's play the game. The car is 60 feet long. It's 20 feet high. It's 4.8 and a half inches wide. And it's filled with pasta sauce. We then measure the size of a can. And with our little hand calculator, we're trying to figure out the cubic volume that the cans are taking up to fill up this railroad car and calculating that into the number of gallons. And our best guess is 38,000 gallons of pasta sauce.
That's great. Oh my God.
So we're standing there, I'm looking at it. I said, now what? He goes, I don't have a clue. I said, look, it's hot. Either tell me what we're going to do or let's go home. He says, well, I got to go find a buyer for it. I said, oh, you're going to sell it? He goes, yeah. I said, well, right this minute, what would you take for it? And he looks up at the car, and the car serial number starts off with a 5, and he goes, $5,000. I said, sold. He goes, what do you mean sold? I said, sold. Now, here's my quick calculation. If it's 38,000 gallons, and I'm paying $5,000 for it,
right?
I'm getting this stuff for relatively very, very low cost, right? I know I'm going to make money. And in my head, I'm going to go sell it to Pizza Hut for, you know, pizzas. It's that, that's right, where my head is. He says, okay. He says, tomorrow you'll bring me the check. Yeah. I didn't have
$5,000. Oh, my God.
So I go to the bank. I tell him what I want to do. And the bank goes, what do you know about pasta sauce? I said, nothing. He says, what makes you think you could sell it? I said, you do the math. 38,000 gallons, $5,000. I got to be able to sell it for, I don't know, $1 a gallon. I don't know. He says, we're not going to give you the money. I said, what's it going to take? He says, we're not going to give you the money. I said, I want the money. I need the money. I want to do this. He goes, okay. He says, I know that you have a lot of photography equipment because that's how I was making my money as my regular job as a photographer. He said, you bring every piece of equipment you own. We're going to lock it up in the vault and we'll give you the $5,000.
Wow.
Okay. Now I'm out of business, right? Because I have no cameras anymore.
Oh, no. Now you're in the pasta sauce business.
Now I'm in the pasta sauce business.
Yeah.
So I give the guy the money. I go home. I am thrilled. I am high-fiving. I am like off the charts happy. Phone rings. Mr. Feldman. Yes. Tim Schmidt, Atchison, Topeka, and Santa Fe Railroad. You guys borrowed the bolt cutter from me. Yeah, yeah. Hi, how are you doing? He goes, so I understand you bought the railroad car 5MWD92. Yes, I did. Great. Move it. What? Move it.
Oh, my God.
Joe, it had never, ever crossed my mind that I had to move it.
Oh, my God.
He said, you have a locomotive? No. You have a caboose? No. He says, you know, you can't make a train unless it has an engineer, a trainman, a caboose, and the easement rights to move across other people's railroad tracks. He says, what do you do? I said, I'm a law student. He goes, and you've never done this before. I said, no. He goes, well, this is the dumbest thing I've ever heard of. I said, well, you and the bank are in full agreement. He said, okay, kid, today's your lucky day. I'm off for the weekend. I'm taking a couple personal days, Monday and Tuesday. Have an answer for me on Wednesday. Good luck. Now I reassemble the study group and I get a half a thing of beer, a pony keg of beer. I get a half a dozen pizzas. And that's how we started our study group. And I say, hey, guys, before we start the study group, I got a game I want to play. What if you had a lot of pasta sauce and you had to get rid of it really soon? What would you do with it? So we started thinking about where was it going? How about military bases? Yeah, those guys are coming in and out for training. Sure, that's perfect. What about prisons? Yeah, they can't complain about food. What about universities? Yeah, they'll eat anything. What about other distributors? So I've got this list and I am thrilled to death. And Monday morning, I'm on the phone and I call the training base, which was about, I don't know, 80, 100 miles away from Topeka. Hey, we're interested. Yes. Yes. What's the expiration date? What?
No.
What's the expiration date? Oh, crap. Back in the car, they've moved my railroad car. It took me most of the day to find it.
Oh, my God.
I find it. I find the box. I find the expiration code. Remember, this is not a time of cell phones, etc. I go back. I call the guy. I said, here's your expiration date. Here's your product code. Do we have a deal? And he said, tell you what. He says, I don't want to haggle with you. I'll give you $2 a gallon. And I said, cash? He goes, cash. And he says, wait a minute. You said they were number 10 cans, not regular cans. I said, yes. He goes, well, then to be fair, it's $3 a gallon. But I want a discount. So let's settle it $2.50.
Oh my God.
50 times 38,000 less the five I got to pay the bank. I'm a genius, right? I said, you got a deal. He goes, perfect. He says, what's your GSA number? What?
Don't have one.
Don't have one. he says, I'll mail you the paperwork. You mail it to Washington. It takes you X amount of time to get it back. I said, oh, no. We can't come up with this. He says, look, I can't buy it at that. He says, and frankly, in thinking about it, I was going to try to take you back down to $2. But since you can't sell it to me, it doesn't really matter. I said, let me get back to you. Called the prison. Prison was interested. What's your GSA number? Because they're federal prisons.
Yep.
Called the university. University's under a land grant. What's your GSA number? Now the clock is ticking, Joe. Now it's getting panicky.
I got it. Yep.
Well, if I can't sell it to where it's going, maybe I can sell it back to where it came from. What if I could sell it to them for less than it cost them to make it? So the product was American Family Products. They're the owners of Chef Boyardee. I get on the phone. I get to the product manager's desk, and a young lady answers the phone. And I said, I need to talk to him. She says, he's in a meeting. When will he be out of the meeting? I don't know. Well, I really need to talk to him today. Well, I don't know how long he's been. This is the end of the quarter, and they're having some kind of a meeting. She says, I'm really filling in for the girl who's normally here. I'm from a different department. What can I do for you? Listen, you have no idea. No. How long is it going to be? No. She says, why are you calling? And I said, well, I'm working on a project of the actual costs of manufacturing a product, pushing it through the distribution channels, including the freight, the advertising, the marketing allowances to the end consumer. And I was trying to use a commodity that everybody would recognize, say, pasta sauce, spaghetti sauce. And she goes, oh, that's very interesting. She says, how can I help? And I said, well, I just need to know where the start for my base cost is. Hold on. There's a report sitting on the desk. It's the end of the quarters I told you, and it's a summary of all the products that we make. Let me see if it's listed. You can hear her thumbing through the pages, and she goes, yeah, I got it. It costs us $3 a gallon to make.
Oh, here cool. We go.
Okie dokie. Okay, have a nice day. No, no, no. Put me on hold. I'll wait till he comes back. I was on hold for, I don't know, 30, 40 minutes. This guy picks up the phone. He goes, I don't know who you are. I don't know what you want, but I got to hand it to you. Nobody has sat on hold for the better part of an hour. This must be GD important. I said, it is. I have some of your pasta sauce. He goes, oh, no, no. Call customer service. I said, no, not exactly. I got a lot of your pasta sauce, and I'd like to sell it back to you. He goes, why would we do that? I said, well, I was hoping to sell it back to you for less than it cost you to make it. He says, well, he says, that would be $1.50 a gallon. How much do you have? I said, my best guess, about 38,000 gallons, but I think it's more. He goes, okay. And where is it now? I said, it's in Topeka, Kansas. He goes, okay. So do we have a deal? I said, no. Now, Joe, why did I say no at this point? It's very late in the afternoon. He's my only potential buyer. Why did I say no?
I'm assuming because someone's going to have to move it.
First thought was, if it's costing him $3 to make, I can probably get a few more pennies out of this.
Okay.
So I said to him, I really need $1.65, just an arbitrary number. But I figured for another 10%, he wasn't going to pass the deal.
Right. And
that extra dime times 38,000 is a significant amount of money.
To a law student, yes.
Well, but here's the other rule. People talk about percentages.
Yes.
Percentages are irrelevant. It's the real money.
Yep.
When I was doing work for McDonald's and pricing things out, we would price them out to the hundredth of a cent. Because when you're buying 150 million of anything, that hundredth of a cent amounts to real cash. So the logic was I could get him up another 10% without him balking at it. And he agreed. He says, $1.65, do we have a deal? I said, no. He goes, what's left? And I said, you ready for it? Drum roll.
Go ahead.
How much you give me for the railroad car, the boxcar? Remember, we were focused on the contents.
You bought the box cart.
Of course I did. It came with the deal.
Yes.
What was I going to do with it?
Oh, my God.
A box car at that time was about $75,000. Today, that same box car is about $175,000.
Okay.
He says, well, is it in a box car? I said, yes. All you got to do is hook up your train and move it on. He goes, well, that'll save us a lot of time. He says, what do you want for it? I said, well, you know, boxcars are about $70,000, $80,000. He says, I'm not paying you $70,000, $80,000. He goes, we buy them wholesale. He says, I think we pay $70,000 and I'll give you $35,000. I'll give you half of what it's worth because it's used. I started laughing. I said, what's a used boxcar? You know, it's not shiny anymore.
Oh, my
so
God.
He agreed, $35,000. I had him wire transfer the money to the bank. The bank called when the money came in and said, is this the pasta sauce? I said, yes. He says, so you're paying the $5,000 back. And I said, yes. And he goes, well, that was pretty fast. We didn't even process the paperwork yet. So I guess there'll be no charge for writing the loan because we haven't done anything yet.
Oh.
So they got their $5,000. I called the guy that took me there, my fellow law student, and I said, listen, I sold the pasta sauce, and I want to thank you for bringing me there. You remember I paid $5,000 for it. He goes, what, are you going to complain about it? He says, no, to the contrary, I'm going to give you $5,000. Why are you doing that? I said, because the next time you have a railroad car that you have to adjust, call me, because I think I'm the only guy that's ever paid you and paid it forward. He goes, Feldman, you're now on my speed dial. You are now my best friend. You know, our car needed some work and you paid for it. Then I called the guy from the railroad and I thanked him. And I said, I'm coming over with $5,000 as a thank you for letting me stay there. And he goes, why would you do that? And I said, because My friend cannot be the only guy that comes and adjusts railroad cars. There must be other adjusters. So you're going to tell them that you have a buyer for them on the right of first refusal.
Oh, my God.
And I ended up buying 11 more boxcars that full year.
That's awesome.
And that's where my terminology, think inside the box, came from, because a railroad car is called a boxcar.
That's beautiful. And I'm going to tell you what, I'm sitting here laughing because as you went on, I'm doing a checklist and I'm thinking to myself, this story is going to take most of, if not all of the episode. But the thought that crosses my mind is if people pay attention to your process, it's not only an analysis of what to do with a boxcar of tomato sauce, but it's how to make the ask, how to set the terms and what money actually means to the people on the other side. How do you determine value for both you and them and get what you want? How do you keep your network alive? And how do you build your business? And what do you do when you're under the gun? So in a lot of ways, you've actually answered all of the questions I would normally ask. And people need to go back and listen to the story again and realize this whole story is a metaphor for a successful business, period.
And in answer to that, I apply it every day, every single day. I mean, I do things that most people would say, this guy's got big cojones, or this guy is stupid, or this guy is nuts. But that's how I've lived my life.
And
I have always been heavy. I have always dated beautiful women, always, because I go up and ask. And 9 times out of 10, they go, well, you know, nobody else had asked me to the dance. Well, why not? Well, I guess they're afraid of me. I said, well, I'm not afraid of you. I think you're stunningly beautiful. I'm really a good dancer. I also make chocolate. And since you don't have a date and I don't have a date, why don't we see how this works out?
Well, let's wrap by, if people are looking to get a hold of you, to chat, to find out more about how all of that applies to them, what is the best way for people in Cigar Peg to get a hold of you?
So if they want to call me, I have an 800 number. You're going to love this. It's 888 Shift Happens. And Happens is HPNS. Okay. So it's 888 Shift HPNS.
Okay.
My email is jfeldman@jfainc.com. And my website is Shift Happens.
Okay.
And Joe, if you ever want to invite me back, I've got 20 more stories like that of how I have looked inside the box and come up with a twist or a turn or a solution that most people hadn't thought about.
And I think that might very well happen. So I want to thank you for joining us today. And we're going to wrap this episode up. And I appreciate you being here.
Anytime, my friend.
And we thank you, our listener members. Please join us every 2 weeks as we drop a new episode, placing another Cigar Peg member in the spotlight of the Cigar Lounge.